Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on the Score.
I think what you do is this is when you look back, and I just feel at this point in time in my career, these are things that excite me when I wake up in the morning to be able to figure out these projects, challenges. Yeah, I absolutely run to these challenges. The state of Illinois is amazing state. I have great respect and admiration for Governor Pritzker and all of our political leaders. And so it's going to be special to be able to come together and be able to turn around and say, look what we were able to do collectively. And because we did what we did and doing what we're doing, there will be people in the community whose life we made better.
What's nice now here on the Spiegel and Holmes show is that we know that Kevin Warren loves this song. We know it well because he said it to us right there in the hallway. He brought it up. It's one of the songs on my Kevin Warren Soul playlist on Spotify that I have since sent to the man. He has not responded, but folks, he
will.
That
song means you're cleaning today.
Is that what that song means?
That's in a lot of black families, that's on a playlist of, oh, it is 7:30 in the morning and you need to clean.
Oh, it's time to go, huh? Golden Time of Day by Maze and Frankie Beverly, and Zoom by the Commodores, and As by Stevie Wonder. Those are the three songs on my Kevin Warren Soul Spotify playlist that, again, the man has not responded to. I sent it to him. Thought we'd bond and just add some songs week to week.
That was going to happen.
Not just yet.
But it was nice to get some time with him, and you definitely see the charm at work. You can see how he has gotten to where he is.
For sure. And the business card is elite.
Yeah, I mean, the stock of that card.
Come on.
I know we need to get to this, but we can address this as a wolf pack. Alex and I were talking about this.
Yes.
Do you guys care about business card? Do you carry a business card?
I don't. And I haven't had one for a long time. I used to have a card in my wallet that simply said my card on it so I could give it to people. Like, here's my card. And I would give it to them just for the joke. Then I'd have to ask for them to give it back
to me. This is why you went to go see Naked Gun. Take a seat.
like, take a chair. I don't need a chair. I've got plenty of those at my house. You know what? I will take a chair. And she takes one at the end of the scene.
Tanny, do you have a card? Coach.
No. Coach! When I first got hired here, Andy, shout out to Andy, printed up a bunch of business cards for me. And I was like, oh, this is so cool. And then the company switched hands and ownership very soon after. So most of the stuff on the business card became null and void at that point.
Right. Well, that's the thing. It just didn't seem like it was useful.
But Alex and I were trying to figure out, like, is what's proper protocol now when exchanging information?
Give each other's cell phone. That's asking a lot.
That is asking a lot. Like, that's, I like that Kevin Warren still, if you're someone like him and you can get the card made on great stock, like he's got it made on, then yeah, you want to do that. Like, it's kind of a fun status thing. But now, do I wonder, do people just at you, like, do they say, oh, I'll follow you, I'll DM you,
maybe
and that's where you start with people versus the phone number, because the phone number kind of seems intrusive.
I gotta see, after having the Kevin Warren business card, it made me think about having a business card again, just so I could try to feel as good as about myself as he probably does on a daily basis. The strength of that card.
Strong. Well, there have been some decisions made, well, kind of, on where the Bears are going and what they're focusing on. And these are all things that most of us kind of knew, but we needed the Bears to raise voice to it. So they did. This is Kevin Warren talking about the state of the Bears' new stadium.
One of the things I do want to start with is that we are still extremely focused on Arlington Heights, on building our stadium there. That's the plan. We strongly believe that is the only location in Cook County that will allow us to build a stadium, the new Chicago Bears stadium with a fixed roof. We're making great progress. We are now in the process of having weekly meetings with the leaders at the Village of Arlington Heights on a weekly basis. So those meetings are going well. We've been meeting
every week here for the last couple of months, and making excellent progress. The plan still is to proceed forward this year and hopefully receive a positive vote in a fall veto session from the Illinois state government to allow us to proceed forward with our project. The biggest item that remains, that has remained, is the fact of this mega project bill that was on the docket in the spring, but it was not put forth for a vote. But it's very, very important that passes, because without that legislation, we're not able to proceed forward. We stand ready. The stadium is designed. Like I said, we're meeting weekly with the village, and it's been good to work with Mayor Tenaglia. And the biggest issue that we have to realize, there's been some conversation that people have said this is a Chicago Bears bill. Would the Bears benefit from this mega project property tax bill from a property tax standpoint? Absolutely. But this is a jobs bill. And in the climate that we're in from an economic standpoint locally, but also from a national standpoint, but especially here in the state of Illinois, people need to be put to work. And you're talking about this stadium project would create over 56,000 permanent jobs, 56,000 construction jobs, 9,100 permanent jobs that it would create. So you're talking about putting people to work. So this is an economic bill that would give people jobs, allow them to work, to get to work. Yes, the Bears would benefit from it, but it's much more than the Bears benefiting from this bill. The entire state of Illinois would benefit from it. There are some certain guardrails in it. You have to make a commitment. You know, this is a commitment that you have to be in that location for 20 years. And these are big projects ranging from $100 million to $500 million. And it not only would benefit people here in the city of Chicago and surrounding areas in Cook County and Arlington Heights, but also all across our state. And we need to make sure that we put people to work. So that's been something that I just want to make it very clear on. We've had some fantastic meetings recently with labor, and some strong meetings there. They're supportive of this bill because it's a jobs bill. And as I said, when you start creating over 56,000 jobs on a construction standpoint and 9,100 on a temporary basis that turn into be permanent jobs long term, over 9,000 jobs, that is serious, a serious positive opportunity.
All right, so what we clearly have here, because he gives you some very specific details, the fall veto session. So October is one more session and one more time for the state to gather and try to vote on this tax relief bill. And this tax relief bill is, in Kevin Warren and George McCaskey's mind, about the surrounding infrastructure of restaurants, retail, various public spaces, and things like that. And the governor has said that he would consider a bill like that. He said he doesn't want to financially help with the stadium, but he has told news sources that he might be open to the idea of state dollars helping the infrastructure around the stadium. So,
which is what a governor or a mayor should do.
Yes.
Is that you're going to have to build entryways, and there's going to have to be expansion of some streets and maybe of some expressways. Like there's some stuff that expressway ramps. Like there's going to be some stuff that has to be done from the state level if this is going to work. This is quite the pivot. Like politically, it's quite the pivot, because if you go back a year ago, there was a pep rally at Soldier Field with them talking about wanting to build, and Brandon Johnson is clearly like hung on to the hope of the Bears doing something in the city, when it only made sense for the Bears to own their own property. And I'm glad to hear Kevin Warren give voice to that yeah, we're the only people that can build the thing that we want to build, which is something that has a roof on it, because we want to make sure that we can get the dollars from it. The other thing is, I'm happy for them.
Yeah, no, because here's the thing, just quickly, about the pivot, you're right. This is publicly saying what we've all known was the growing momentum. Even when Mark Grody said it to the mayor last week on The Score, that there's just not momentum for what you want. And the mayor was like, yeah, you know, I agree. Because there isn't, because this is where they are.
I do wonder if in an honest moment, if Brandon Johnson is like, that wasn't great for me. Like he gave away a lot of political capital to kind of bend the knee to the Bears. It made him look terrible. And for people who were already like, I don't know if I'm going to vote for this guy the next time that he runs, it was something that damaged him, his credibility.
Interesting.
And I wonder if he feels burned by it, because everything was setting up. Like, and it's funny because Kevin Warren, I'm thinking back to the interview, and Kevin Warren is talking about the same type of job numbers that Brandon Johnson was talking about in the interview that I did with him. And the thing is that I talked to a bunch of union people before the interview, and they said it doesn't, like, the union is protected. If the guys are in Cook County, they're going to be Chicagoans who have the job in Arlington Heights. It doesn't matter that the stadium itself is in Chicago or in Arlington Heights. Chicago people are going to be working on that project.
Well, they are clearly focused on Arlington Heights, and that's what they're doing. And now they're trying to get the money from the state to go along with their own investment to make it happen. And that's so obviously what they're doing. And George McCaskey was asked today about if Springfield is going along with the Bears enough at this point.
Is there any concern that it's taken this long, that you could have had this done a couple years ago?
No, these things take time. It's on us to convince the governor and the state legislators that this is a good idea for the people of Illinois, and we need to do a better job at that. This project can be, as Kevin said, transformative, and the concern is that delay means greater expense, and it also means that we're missing out on another round of assignment of major events. We need to get in the mix.
Right.
So they're hoping that happens now.
Which is why the dalliance with the city, I never understood it. I never understood it. To me, it was counterproductive to getting something done, to getting the shovels in the ground. Once you had spent the $200 million on the property in Arlington Heights, the city made zero sense from a business standpoint.
They were just using that. They were using the mayor and using the city to try to get a few things from Arlington Heights, like from the school board. And they did get some of those things. That's all they were doing. It was just politics.
I don't know. I don't think it was just politics.
Oh, I think it was Kevin Warren like falling in love with the city and all the romance.
That's what I think it is. I don't think it was just purely a political play. I think it was, man, it'd be really cool to do this thing here. But once you've already spent that money, it's sunk cost that you bought that land. And the idea of, well, we'll just flip that land and sell it for a profit, or we'll build something else up there.
Yeah, I think they were trying to get what they could from the school board of Arlington Heights
They were always going to get that. Like, both mayors have been like, we can't wait for the Bears to get here to Arlington Heights.
Right, but some other people, some non-mayor people, the school board and other people in Arlington Heights were not that way. They needed to be pushed around a little bit.
Well, the other part of the pivot is jobs. Like, this is what politicians have done for forever to try to get people's votes. It's what they will do for the midterm elections and then the presidential election coming up. They will do all of that. Jobs. How can we create jobs? Cam Buckner was on with us. He's part of the Illinois Assembly. And he said that the Bears still have a lot of work to do in Springfield.
They said that Arlington Heights is the focus. Now, I think the question remains, though, what do they need to make Arlington Heights happen? Does that mean property tax legislation in the state legislature? Does that mean infrastructure money from the state government? If that is the case, then it makes the conversation a little different, because then you're asking folks like me, who represent Chicago, who don't want to see the Bears leave the city, to sign off on letting them go. Signing off, not just sign off on it, but pay to help them move. I think that that's problematic.
So my problem overall, and this is whether it's Cam Buckner or Mayor Johnson, I don't think that you should allow for the romanticism of the Bears being in Chicago city limits to keep you from making a move that might be beneficial for everyone. They'll have to judge on how beneficial it's going to be. I just don't like that emotional tether of, well, the Bears belong in Chicago and they should stay in Chicago. Because if you look around, there are plenty of teams that have a city on their helmet that they are playing not in. And it's fine. Both New York teams, the team in San Francisco, the team in Dallas, like,
sure, but like, this is Chicago, Cam, and it's the mayor wanting to get something, having the handout and being like, well, what can we get? If the state's going to pass this bill, what can we get? And like, Kevin sold the mayor on this idea of doing it on the lakefront and still getting in bed because the mayor dreamt of some state money helping him with some city things. And he got used. He got flat out used.
I would imagine that hopefully there are some people who recognize that and let the mayor know that. But even last week, he was still kind of like clinging on.
Because he's desperate. But it was desperate.
But here's the thing, like, from a political capital standpoint, and I never understood this with Lori Lightfoot either. I don't think anyone's not going to vote for you because the Bears went to Arlington Heights. Like, and I feel like that's part of this. It's like, well, I want to be the mayor that keeps the Bears. Like, there are going to be other things that you're going to be judged on in the city. And to worry about something as superfluous as that, like, as something that you can stake to your reign as mayor of Chicago, mm-hmm. to me, it was a waste of time and a waste of credibility on both of the mayor's parts, Lightfoot and Johnson. And Johnson, if you remember, like, when he was talking last week with Layla and Marshall, there have been things that have been accomplished by his administration that he was crowing about. It's going to be hard for him, for people to look past the way he acted in trying to woo the Bears to stay in the city.
Kevin Warren was asked also today if the whole stadium thing ended up being harder than he thought so far.
Absolutely not. I mean, you know, you think about it, that's why you build these stadiums once every 40 years. And so it's not for the faint of heart, but I've been here before. We have the best ownership, not only in the NFL, but in all the pro sports, who are supportive. And this is something that, from an energy standpoint, we all gain on the energy to think that the Bears in 105 years have never had their own stadium, which is rare when you think about that. And all the events that we're missing out on, like I said, from a Super Bowl standpoint. So it's been actually exactly what I had predicted it would be for us to work together. We got a really smart group of individuals who work here at the Bears. We have great consultants. We're come together. And when you have the support of ownership, we can do anything. So we're right on target where I thought we would be.
Man, but it is a massive, massive pivot that has taken place.
Marry that statement to what George said, and I think there is some disagreement about it's gone exactly the way that you had envisioned it.
Well, but even George is talking about AAH as if it was the final play all along. And that's the way that Kevin's talking. Is that
I'm saying about the time part of it. Yeah. That's why George is talking about trying to get something done in this fall assembly, because they've kind of been wasting time, but whatever.
Kevin says he still wants to get shovels in the ground. If they don't get this bill in the October veto session, that will not be the case unless he does it in his backyard.
The last time that we talked with Benji Molina, it was outstanding. We are going to talk to him again about Cubs and Cardinals and baseball and his book and everything else next on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes Show Flashback.
Of the Molina family of catchers, Benji Molina.
Do you have a good Juan Uribe story?
I'm a big Uribe fan. I play with him. He's my teammate in the Giants uni. He loved to play freaking dominoes.
Hold everything. Here comes the manager, Juan Uribe.
I don't know what it is. He did not know how to read. He did not know how to write. I was writing his checks. I was taking him to the bank, and he didn't know how to sign a check or anything like that. Also, he did not know what his name was on the lineup, so I had to go out there many times and say, okay, you're hitting fifth. You see here? Uribe. You see that? That's you, man. You're playing third.
I want to hit his long tonight.
And he would laugh with me. He's a great freaking guy, man. A great teammate. He was always positive. Oh man, but he was crazy, you know. Like he likes to play games and be the joker. He was one of my favorite teammates for sure.
The whole world was worried about you this week. We just wanted to get you on TV so they know you were okay. You're okay everywhere. You're
yeah,
good.
I'm okay. I know you should call, but I'm okay. You know, I'm believing my hand, you know, and my trainer told me they don't have my side. You know, I can't do anything. You know, I have to play like that.
Spiegel and Holmes, afternoons on The Score.
We had such a great time talking with Benji Molina. We were kind of counting down the days when the Cubs and the Cardinals we're going to play again so that we could bring Benji back onto the show. He joins us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Benji, thanks so much for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
Hey, it's really a privilege. Thank you so much for giving me this chance or having me in your show. We had so much fun last time. I mean, I told you guys, whenever you guys need a pinch hitter or something, man, I'm right here.
Well, the thing is like we thought about it after you were done. And we were like, wait, we barely scratched the surface of things that we could talk about with Benji. And one of the things that I realized, like while reading the book, which, by the way, I loved it, man. It's so good. And I hope that they do green light this thing and turn it into a movie. Molina, the story of the father who raised an unlikely baseball dynasty. Pick it up. It's a quick read and it's a lot of fun. We never asked you about 2005. Like here in Chicago, we didn't ask you about the White Sox and the Angels series of 2005. And as I'm reading the book, I'm like, oh yeah, we should have asked Benji about that. So what do you remember about 05 versus the White Sox?
You know what? There's only one play that is probably what people remember. 95% of people are going to remember. And it's that play where Josh Paul. He actually got it on the air, but it was no replays, right? So he looked like he hit the dirt because he got some dust out of the dirt. But he got it up in the air. But usually the catcher takes the ball and throw it to a fan. And he tosses it back to the mound. And that's A.J. Pierzynski. It had to be him, and he started running the first, and I'm like, what the heck is going on? He struck out. So that's the biggest play that I remember, because after that, they won the game. I think it was a double or something happened, and they end up winning the game. So if we win that game, man, I really believe we go to the World Series and then face the Astros. I think that's what it was that year. And now, but that's the play that I really, really remember a lot.
So AJ is just trying to like do whatever he can to have an advantage. Were you going crazy? You're a catcher. You knew what happened. How much were you arguing? What was the dugout like when AJ does that?
You know what? It was an argument because obviously he caught it up in the air. It was a third strike and all that. But the argument was after, when we were telling Josh, like, what were you doing in that moment when you know you keep the ball just in case something happened? If the umpire calls it out, then you throw the ball away to the fence because that's what normally happens. Hmm. But he just tossed the ball to the mound like it was a strikeout, no big deal. But it was. He didn't do anything wrong other than just he should have kept the ball a little longer, right, I guess. But I didn't think the umpire was going to miss that. But we didn't have any replays at that time, so we had no chance. And they said, no, the ball hit the dirt. The ball hit the dirt, and he made it the first, and he made a difference on that series. And Chicago White Sox winning the World Series, too.
It's crazy, because that was your best year as a pro. If we look at wins above replacement, that was your best year. And you got, in reading the book, you're like, oh no, we thought for sure that we were going to win the World Series that year. And for it to end up being a part of a crazy play in the lore of AJ Pierzynski, I imagine that took a long time to get over because you guys were so loaded.
It was a long time because every time you have a team that couldn't make it to the World Series, you have a chance to win. It doesn't matter who you are. You make it to the World Series, you have a chance. And we understand that it's not easy, first of all, to make it to the World Series. It's not easy to win it. But at that moment, we felt like we had a really, really good team to make it to the World Series. And who knows? Who knows and end up winning it?
Benji Molina is with us here on Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score. The timing is fortuitous, Benji, because your brother Yadi Molina is not just in St. Louis like for a fun and like a little ceremony or like to watch the game from a suite. He's in full uniform down on the field. Were you on the field with your brother like within the last hour or hour and a half? What's it like for him to be back with the Cardinals and be in uniform?
He was so nervous. He was so shy. He was one of those guys that got out with the uni and didn't know. It looked like he didn't know what he was doing. If he was, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like one of those rookies. But now he settled so good. He went straight to the bullpen and trying to help out Pozo, who was catching a bullpen out there. So he was doing good, man. Now he's hanging out with the guys. I haven't seen him because he went straight to the bullpen. I was up here trying to do the lineup, but I'm going to head down and probably say hi to him by the time he goes into the clubhouse. But he seems to be having fun. He has a lot of knowledge. So I hope and I pray that these catchers, at least the catchers, right? Because he was a good clutch hitter too. But at least the catchers pick up his brain and talk to him about things. Or the pitchers pick his brain out, because he's only going to be here for two games. Hopefully more later, right? But for now, it is so exciting just to see him out there and being out there in uniform and hanging out with the guys.
I gotta give respect to Oliver Marmol, the manager, for being cool with this. Because, like, there's a lot of Cardinals fans who I'm sure would say, just have him stay and be the manager. But to my understanding, John Mozeliak went down to Ollie Marmol and said, you cool with this? And Ollie said, absolutely, let's do it. Good on him for that.
It is great for Ollie. Also, he can pick up his brain too. And Ollie's not worried about his job. So, I mean, this is an organization that have set, their feet on one guy, and Ollie's their guy for now. And Ollie understands it. If you say no to having Yadi or Wayne or even Pujols if he shows up, if you say no, man, I mean, what are we doing, right? So. It should be an easy decision for Ollie. He should be happy to have him out there. It's a chance for the kids to ask questions, to help out. Maybe it turns the season around for some kids. So, you know, Ollie has his job, and he shouldn't be worried about it. I think he should be happy that Yadi's out here right now.
I agree with you. It'll be interesting to see how all of this stuff plays out. When we talked to you last time, you were saying, yeah, you know, I think we're okay. When you were talking about the Cardinals, like, I think we're okay, but we're still missing some stuff. So here we are a couple months later, and the Cardinals are .500. Why do you think it hasn't quite clicked for them this season?
It is really hard to tell, I tell you. I think the starters had a struggle at the beginning, which pushes back a little. The bullpen had a little struggle also a little bit. It's really hard to tell because they play their butts off, man. They fight. They have a great heart out there. They don't give up on any day. They go out there and sometimes they go down four runs and before you know it, they're back at it. So it is really hard to pinpoint something specific that went wrong to the guys that are playing right there, right? You know, in that middle, you know, like how do you say that one, Doug? 500 level for a bit. So they have great games with good teams. And then the teams that they're supposed to be, they have in trouble with, which that could push you back. It is really hard to pinpoint a reason for these guys to be struggling like this. They have a good team. They like each other. They go out there and battle together. They go out there and put good games on. And I mean, it's really hard to say one thing was going wrong.
When you were a player on a lot of good teams, sometimes teams would make big moves at the deadline and you'd know the front office believed in you and gave you a shot. And sometimes they wouldn't. when you were on a team that didn't make deals, did that affect you? Have you been on teams where it affected you when you're like, oh man, I don't think they believe in us too much, and then it starts to kind of come true that way? That ever happened to you in your career?
It did many times, and we felt that way. We are a team first, right? So when you're playing for the name in the front of your jersey, and you don't see any changes, it does affect you. It really does, because you start putting things in your head. You start putting things like what you were mentioning about not believing in ourselves. We need a couple pieces, and they didn't go and got it, and so now we're pushing back. So it is really hard for the team to come back from it, but at the same time, you have to turn the page on that, and you have to. You have to keep going strong. You have to keep going trying to win every day you can. There's no way. I mean, it affects you, but at the same time, man, you have to shut it down, because the baseball doesn't stop when that trade deadline come in. You trade people. The Cardinals traded like 3 or 4 guys out of their bullpen, but you have to still keep going. You have to tell yourself, stay strong and keep going hard.
Did you ever play as a team pissed off at a front office who didn't give you enough? Like, we'll show them we're good. Like, did it ever pivot like that for you?
No, I never. I can't remember a team that I was. And I was trying to remember when you were saying it, but I don't remember a team that I played that happened. And with the guys were mad. The guys were concentrating in what Bill Belichick says all the time. You do your job, right? If I'm a catcher, worry about the catching position. If you're a shortstop, worry about the shortstop. Don't care about what the first baseman is doing. Now the first baseman has to step up and do their job. You see what I'm saying?
Yep.
So I was in many teams like that. A lot of teams were looking around, but we were worried about our position, and we did not mind what they were doing in the other ones. Hopefully they were doing their job too, so we could have a good team, you know?
So as I was saying, Benji, like we left a lot on the table the last time, and we'll leave a lot on the table this time too, and I'm sure I'll have 50 more questions for you the next time you come on the show. But I need a radio-friendly Ozzie Guillen story.
You know what? It's not friendly.
Even better.
Ozzie could not hold himself up to make fun of my speed, man. Oh my gosh, man. I played the White Sox, and I wasn't even worried about no freaking Mark Burley or whoever the heck they had. I didn't care less who they were pitching or who they were playing on the field. I was worried about freaking Ozzie Guillen making fun of my speed, man. Hey, come in, third base. Come in. He might bunt. And I'm like, come on, man. Really? Just leave me alone, brother. So, I mean, it was hard, man. It was tough. But it was fun, man. That kid is fun. That Ozzie is super fun. I don't know how he is personally, because I don't know. I never played for him. But the guy said he was fun. He was fun. And then, those are the funny stories, man. They were always trying to make fun of how I run. They never saw the double that I got, two RBIs. Never mentioned that one.
Send him a clip. Send him a clip, Benji.
You had three stolen bases in your career.
How about the cycle? They don't remember that one. But then they remember that I didn't make it a first on a swinging bunt. You know? What the hell? It was tough, man. It was tough, but it was fun, man. He's a good dude.
Well, Benji, you're the best, man, and I absolutely love the book, and I recommend it to anyone who loves baseball. It's so great, and it's so emotional. Like, that's the last couple chapters, like, really got me in my feels. It's such a warm story of your baseball family and your baseball life, man. I appreciate you, and thank you so much for being on our show.
Thank you. You know what? We took very serious the fact that the kids out there are looking out on us and they're seeing us. We try to be role models out there. We try to push the kids. We try to push the parents. That's what the book is about, pushing the parents. Take your time. Sacrifice your time for your kiddos. Don't hesitate to play catch. Don't hesitate to take them to the field and sacrifice that time for them. So that was what the book was more about, you know?
It's a great book, man, and we appreciate you. Have fun tonight. We'll talk to you soon.
Heck yeah, guys. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Benji. It's Benji Molina.
You played catch with your son a couple days ago.
I did. And just the idea of, like, sacrificing your own time to make sure that you get enough time with your kid as they grow, that hits awfully, awfully close to home.
That's what their dad did. He was, like, team dad. Like, he was, for all the kids in their village, like, he was the guy that was lining the field and teaching young kids how to play the game. It's a beautiful book. I highly recommend it if you love baseball.
Reminds me of when we had Tim Hardaway in here, and he was talking about the guy who used to open the gym for them on Saturday mornings at 6 in the morning, just to give them something to do so they didn't get out and do other stuff, and how now Tim Hardaway makes sure to come back to Chicago and do what he can and pay that forward. That's how the world's supposed to work.
No doubt about it. So shout out to Benji Molina. I'm glad that we have built a fun little relationship with him.
You saw this awesome thing promoting a really cool local baseball event on the Instagram, and you sent it our way, but I think you just sent it to get me angry again at somebody, and it worked really, really well.
No, I think that it's previewing a really huge baseball event that's going to happen.
All right, well, it also made me angry.
And it celebrates our shared Chicago baseball history.
Yeah, it does. It does.
In a beautiful way.
I totally agree.
It's next here on The Score.
Spiegel and Holmes.
Who would dare interrupt me during my midday fast? Yeah. Oh, The Spiegel and Holmes Show.
Afternoons on The Score.
On this date in 1960, Al Smith connects on a home run, setting off Bill Veeck's new exploding scoreboard for the very first time.
Enraged me. Still enrages me now. You take a job for one of the heritage franchises in baseball history, in a town blessed with incredible baseball lineage, and you don't know who Bill Veeck is. And it's several months in, and you haven't done the research to learn? Shame on you. Shame. But anyway, I've been holding that in because, you know, you don't just go after somebody for something that happened a while back. But when Chris Tannehill plays it again, what do you expect to happen, Tanny? What do you expect?
The Savannah Bananas.
Yes.
Bananas. I love them.
Yellow.
Well, I mean, they're doing really well.
They really are.
They are going to be at 35th and Shields August 15th and 16th. So I looked on the White Sox website. It says here, tickets in the lower bowl, 300 level and 500 level are sold out. They are already sold out.
Oh, yeah, man.
For that event next week.
I want to go and I do not have tickets. And it looks like an unbelievably difficult ticket to get. Because the Savannah Bananas are the good.
They've been selling out football stadiums.
Bananas. I love them. That's the thing, you know? And so, of course, you can't get that ticket. But Jesse Cole, who's the dude in charge of the Bananas, he idolizes Bill Veeck, and he's very friendly with Mike Veeck. And so it's no coincidence that they're here with the White Sox, and he's happy about
it. Yeah, he's put this out on social today, and it was great. And some of the photos inside of this reel are absolutely amazing. But it shouldn't be that far of a leap for anyone to see the connection between what the Bananas are doing and what the White Sox have done. Oh, we don't have it? Oh, my bad. That's on me. I thought we had it. That's my mistake. Not a big deal. We can move on. We can just keep talking about it.
I think
it.
It's a huge deal.
No, it's maybe. Not. It's no, Friday. Not at all. People are gone.
No, it's... It's all good.
But ever walked around here on a Friday?
I love that you sent that into the thread, and I enjoyed watching it. And it's Jesse Cole, the man in charge of the Bananas, properly crediting Bill Veeck, one of the legendary figures in baseball promotional history, for the names on the back of the uniforms.
The fireworks.
From the
convincing
exploding
Harry
scoreboard.
Carey to sing the seventh inning stretch.
Yes, yes.
Which there are a lot of people who don't know about, like, that part of the tradition of it. That people think that it just happened amazingly over at Addison and Clark. But no.
No, it happened first with Harry Carey as a White Sox broadcaster. That's where it happened. And, like, and of course, Bill Veeck back in the day with the St. Louis Browns with a million different things that he invented promotionally, including Eddie Goodell, wearing 1/8 on his uniform number when he was sent out to hit. But there's legendary things that Bill Veeck changed forever.
The idea of baseball is carnival. baseball is entertainment. I think that goes along with the legacy of Bill Veeck and the Veeck family, that it's supposed to be, if you think about baseball at the time before media was so fragmented or having the ability to not pay attention, they were entertainment. So you need to do stuff for the people that are sitting there spending money in your ballpark.
Without a doubt. If anyone has not watched it or is looking for a great sports documentary, totally family friendly, and it also tugs at the heartstrings, The Saint of Second Chances on Netflix, the story of Mike Veeck and the St. Paul Saints and his family. It also speaks obviously a lot on Bill Veeck, tons of stuff on Disco Demolition in there, and much, much more. The Saint of Second Chances is an incredible watch, and everybody in this town should know who Bill Veeck is. Everybody, whether you work for the teams or not.
What's crazy is, and I'm seeing people texting the show and people who are texting me, the secondary market for banana tickets are wild.
Oh, dude.
And apparently you had to enter a lottery to even get tickets for this thing?
More than a year ago. And I have friends who work
crazy.
I have friends who work for the White Sox who, like, you know, I've been working and trying and saying, is there anything I can do? I'm happy to pay, you know, all of that. Because, like, yeah, but it's incredibly hot and chaotic ticket to get. Should be great, great fun. Just wait till 2027 when there's no baseball and the bananas are just constantly
barnstorming with MLB players that aren't playing actual MLB baseball.
Right. But, you know, there's lots of teams. Bill Lee pitches, you know, against the bananas and for the bananas sometimes. Our buddy Bronson Arroyo has pitched for and against the bananas. Like, they got a lot of folks doing that.
Oh, my God. The secondary market.
It's outrageous.
If you want to get,
I know.
If you want to get a bananas ticket in section 356, it'll cost you $414 to get a ticket to go see the bananas.
On the 300 level. Yeah?
Yeah. I got one in 530 for you, which is a great spot. That's actually where I have my tickets. $195.
Really?
Yeah. Two left.
530 might work.
There are two left.
Okay. I'll take it under advisement.
Take it under advisement. We've got a Bears report to do. Emma's got us. He's got all the stuff from the dual practice with the Dolphins next here on The Score.